the dragon that I'm jousting against this year is this frozen monopoly of the two parties there that have frozen a lot of people's thinking in place. And they think, I have to be a right winger, I have to be a left winger. They're not thinking, what do I think?
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with William Weld, former governor of Massachusetts and vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party, and Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico and the presidential candidate, nominee of the Libertarian Party at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas. Thank you guys for talking.
Yeah, thanks. Thank
you so much. Let's get right at it. You are, according to a most recent New York Times poll, you're at 12%. Why is that happening, and where does it end?
Well, it's happening because, first and foremost, arguably the two most polarizing figures in American politics today, Trump and Clinton. So that's the primary factor. But then secondarily, two Republican governors, two-term, getting reelected in states that are heavily Democratic. I mean, I think there's a lot here in the Libertarian ticket. I think we're reflective of most Americans, which, speaking with a broad brushstroke, is being fiscally conservative and socially tolerant, liberal, whatever, as long as you don't force it on me. And a big unoccupied space, too, is nobody standing up and saying, let's stop dropping bombs. Let's stop with the military interventions, that they're having the unintended consequence of making things worse, not better. There's no peace candidate.
What is the worst aspect of a potential Trump presidency, and what's the worst aspect of a potential Clinton presidency?
I'll start with Trump. you know, I don't think that Mr. Trump has made a great study of the issues. I'm not sure that he's read deeply in history as it might apply to current political decisions. So I see a shallowness.
So we'll talk about immigration. Isn't that what people want? You know, they want to restrict immigration. They want to restrict Syrians or Arabs or Muslims.
You know, having been in New Hampshire and having been in the Midwest, what I have recognized is that 30% of Republican voters believe the scourge of the earth is Mexican immigration. Now, it was my voice in 2012 that said, no, that's not the case. But I know that that group exists. And when things are bad, you know, you look for a scapegoat and... In this case, they're taking jobs that U.S. citizens could have. Well, no, they're not. They're not murderers and rapists. And the notion of rounding up 11 million undocumented workers, how's that going to work out in New Mexico, where 50% of the population is Hispanic? Well, federal government's going to start knocking on doors. It goes on and on.
But the other thing is the rule of law in the Constitution. And we pride ourselves on the rule of law in this country, not only socially and in terms of our government, but also our economy, both domestic and foreign. And Mr. Trump has suggested he would slap a 45% tariff on Chinese goods, 35% tariff on Mexican goods, build a huge wall and make the Mexicans pay for it. Any number of things that would violate his duties under the Constitution. He sent a fundraising letter to members of foreign legislatures. That's a violation of the Emoluments Clause. We would be hauled before the Court of International Justice at Hague as a rogue nation if we did everything that Donald Trump has proposed in the area of foreign policy. I'm not kidding.
No, I was going to say, I think the Hague will be the least of our problems, right, in the Court of International Opinion. But Hillary Clinton now, you talk about protectionism. Hillary Clinton is against, she's talking down NAFTA. She started doing that in 2000.
We're the only free trade ticket out there.
Okay,
we're
so that's what I'm saying. So what is particularly bad about Hillary Clinton? I mean, she's a protectionist too. What else, what would be terrible about a Hillary Clinton presidency?
That she is the establishment. Nothing's going to actually, things are going to change. Government's going to try and do more in our lives as opposed to less. And so that's going to mean higher taxes. And that's money out of your and my pocket that we could be spending on our own lives as opposed to government knows best. And she is really, and I don't think that this has been intentional, but she's really been the architect of our foreign policy that has made things worse, not better, using Syria and Libya as an example. You know, going in and supporting the opposition in those two countries that are aligned with ISIS. You can't make this up. This is what has happened.
Say something negative about Hillary Clinton. You've been dinged in the press. You seem very, I mean, you're friendly with her and you like her as a person, but...
Oh, I'm old friends with both Clintons, but election time at the end of the day, there are no friends, okay?
Yeah.
The first thing I would say is just the fiscal situation. When President Obama leaves office, the national debt is going to be $20 trillion, doubled since not so long ago. You can't go on like that. You can't go and try to renegotiate the terms of our national debt with the Chinese. That's Trump, not Clinton.
Right.
I think it's something that she truly believes, that she would like to raise the amount of social spending, raise the amount of government spending, called investment on the other, on the Democratic side of the aisle. And I think that'd be bad for the economy. It would hollow out the economy. We're small government people. We cut taxes. We shrank government. The Democrats would go the other direction.
You know, we're spending about $4 trillion a year, the federal government. In the first budget that is signed by Johnson-Weld administration, how much are you going to spend, and where do you take it from?
You cannot do the Washington thing of assuming that anything other than a 5% increase is a cut. That's Washington speak, and that's what the two-party duopoly has gotten us into, both parties.
If you only have a 2% rate of growth in government, overall government spending, you balance the budget in 5 years.
So you would freeze spending or keep it below 2% annually?
We would come out of the chute proposing a balanced budget. 20% of government spending is becoming debt.
Would you cut 20%?
Proposing a balanced budget, yes, which would in fact target a 20%.
It's not a bad goal. You know, I think I've been around government a long time for my sins, and I think between 10% and 20% of most budgets are overspent. People in Washington particularly do not understand there's no such thing as government money. There's only taxpayers' money. They think it's their money.
You can't do it without addressing military spending. You can't do it without addressing the entitlements, Medicaid and Medicare, Social Security, raising the retirement age. You could have a very fair means testing to go along
so
with
you
Social
would,
Security.
So you're putting, it's not even that you're saying you're putting it all on the table. What you're saying is that, yeah, you're going to cut defense spending. You're going to cut entitlements.
Military spending. I think defense is an,
we're not just saying this. Yeah. We did it. My first year in office, we cut spending in real dollars.
What did you cut?
I cut everything. What you have to do is zero-base the budget. You assume every appropriation is zero when you start the year. That's why it helped both of us. Our first job in elective politics was governor. So we didn't know there were sacred cows in the budget. We didn't even know there were cows. And the same thing would be true in Washington.
We're planning a partnership in this also. No separate staffs. Staffs seek
from
to
each
divide.
Other. And you guys aren't sick of each other yet.
No.
Actually, it's a growing thing.
I did this for seven years with my lieutenant governor. Yeah. We never had an argument.
Governor Johnson, what was the big thing you cut in New Mexico? And you did not cut spending. You reduced the rate of increase. What was the toughest thing? What was the toughest cut or reduction that you...
It wasn't tough, but we reformed Medicaid in the state of New Mexico. And get this. I had an insurance policy as governor of New Mexico for my family, provided for me by the state. Gee, what if we took my insurance policy and gave it to everybody that was receiving Medicaid? Would we actually cut the cost of Medicaid by 20%?
So how do you do that? How do you do that? And if you're president and vice president, you're dealing with Obamacare. Do you repeal Obamacare? What happens?
Well,
there?
Of course, you know, we're looking to get elected president and vice president, not a dictator, not the king. That said, whatever comes out of Congress is what you ultimately end up supporting or not supporting. So with regard to Medicaid and Medicare, the only way, in my opinion, that we reform these two areas are to give these areas, from a service standpoint, up to the states. And having been governor of New Mexico, in my heart of hearts, if the federal government would have given me a fixed amount of money, same amount as the year before, I could have drawn new lines, there would have been a safety net, nobody would have gone without, but that's how you get it done. Washington, one size fits all, I don't think it's possible.
Another couple of touchstones, putting more personal choice into the healthcare area, more competition, letting people shop across state lines. I would let people shop into Canada, it wouldn't shock my conscience. On how you cut the budget a lot, two very quick examples from Massachusetts. We put in a work requirement for welfare. So you have to have a job if you're going to get welfare. Welfare costs went down over 75% the next year. People were not ready for that. We did the same thing when I was a prosecutor. I convicted a lot of people for phony pensions. They would say, I slipped and fell, I want $1 million. So I convicted three people in criminal court in Boston. The next year, the number of disability pensions filed for went down by over 75%. Huge cost savings, And it wasn't a budgetary thing, it was a qualitative thing.
The Supreme Court looms large in everybody's political calculations. Who are the Supreme Court picks you're going to make?
Well, I'm going to turn this over to Bill, this really being his bailiwick, but really there are going to be no litmus tests. You're going to appoint good people, and you're going to appoint people that look at the Constitution from the standpoint of original intent.
I don't think we have to panic and say it has to be a way lefty or a way righty. Steve Breyer has been a good justice. He was appointed by a Democrat.
Massachusetts guy, right?
Massachusetts guy. Merrick Garland, I think, would have been a very good pick, and he's nominated by Obama. I mean, everyone sort of agrees on that. It's just the two-party hysteria that says, just like you can only have far-right congressmen in the Republican Party and far-left congressmen, congresswomen in the Democratic Party, therefore the same is true for the Supreme Court. The opposite is the case. You want people who are tranquil of mind, who can analyze the issues and come to a conclusion that makes sense, rooted in the jurisprudence of our country going back hundreds of years.
You mentioned far right and far left people in Congress. Who are current members of the Senate and the House that you think you could work with? Because if you guys come in, obviously you're not going to have a Libertarian Congress.
I think there's a real opportunity to, and not naming names, but just...
Name names.
Rob Portman, obviously, Kelly Ayotte, Susan Collins, the best of all, Mark Kirk on the Republican side. A guy, he's a challenger, Russ Feingold in Wisconsin. Not saying I'm endorsing him, but he's obviously a person of substantial ability.
So these, but you name people like Collins, but you know most Republicans, and even I think most Libertarians would say Susan Collins is terrible. She votes for more spending. She is not great on the Second Amendment. She's a wishy-washy, kind of country club conservative. You disagree, though.
Yeah.
Well, I do. I'm going to say you challenge Republicans to be good at what they're supposed to be good at, which is dollars and cents, and they're not good at that at all because they pick and choose. They want to cut it from Planned Parenthood, but they want to increase the military budget. Well, gee, that just doesn't work. And then Democrats, look, come on, let's stop dropping bombs. Let's really take a hard look at our military policy. Let's get Congress involved in a declaration of war and how we move forward. And mandatory sensing, ending the drug war. Come on. This is a huge issue.
These are things that Democrats should be good at, but they're not good at either.
Let's talk about Washington if we win, if we get in there. I think it might almost be a relief for members of Congress to have us not being tendentious, not coming in saying, this is how it's got to be. We will hire the best of the Democratic Party, the best of the Republican Party, the best of the Libertarian Party, and the best of all those who are unaffiliated with any party. I almost think that would be appreciated by Congress, so they won't have to think, what does my party say I'm supposed to do? They'll be able to think, what should I do? That would be a big change.
And I just tweak that a little bit. Republicans, Democrats with a Libertarian bent.
Trump and Hillary Clinton, as you mentioned, historically high disapproval ratings. Nobody likes them, even in their own parties. What is the pitch to Democrats? Don't vote for Hillary, vote for Johnson Weld.
The whole honesty and integrity and telling the truth. I think we've had careers based on telling the truth. And when you tell the truth, that's admitting mistakes also. Make plenty of mistakes.
And Hillary does not tell the truth.
Well, I think there's a judgment issue that if I were to have made those same judgment issues, I'd like to think that, whoa, I made some really poor judgment here. Guilty of the judgment, not guilty of criminal intent. That was not the case. That's not something I think you hear her say.
What's the case to Republicans who cannot bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump, or actually might be thinking about it? What do you say? Why should you vote Libertarian?
Same thing. Look, there is a path down the middle here that really does address smaller government. The smaller government is something that is desirable, that liberty and freedom is important. And it means that you can be a social conservative, but don't try and force that on me. And I get the pressures that come with being in elected office. And shouldn't we bomb ISIS? And the knee-jerk is always yes. And so it's drop bombs first, as opposed to, let's look at how that might work out over a long period of time.
What about Bernie Sanders? He is a progressive. He's a social progressive. He wants to grow government. What is the pitch that you guys make to disgruntled Bernie bros to vote for you?
Take the iSideWith.com quiz. See if you turn out like me. I side with myself most, and then next in line, I side with Bernie Sanders. But here's my contention. Are Bernie Sanders supporters really about income equality, or are they about opportunity equality? And if they're about opportunity equality, and this is crony capitalism, this is the fact that government is for sale, it's being sold, you got money, you can buy influence, and you can buy prosperity. Well, we're going to offer up a big dose of government can provide equal opportunity. And if people see that, I think that's more important, or that is something that's achievable.
Even more than any one issue, I think the dragon that I'm jousting against this year is this frozen monopoly of the two parties there that have frozen a lot of people's thinking in place. And they think, I have to be a right winger, I have to be a left winger. They're not thinking, what do I think? And if we can shatter that and get them asking the question, what do I think, and then listen to the three offerings, they're going to come our way. And I don't mean 20% of them. I mean between 40 and 50% of them. And that's the election.
You're traveling all over the country. What are the types of people that are connecting with you the most? Do you have people coming up and saying, I didn't know I was a libertarian until I heard you guys talking? Who are those people?
100 people a day. 100 people a day.
Democrats, Republicans, Independents.
So
equal
everybody.
Amounts.
How are young people responding to this message?
You saw the poll the other day. We're polling higher among millennials than Donald Trump.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think this is the notion of being socially, who cares, as long as those choices don't adversely affect others. Dropping bombs. I think young people recognize that the world isn't a safer place at all for all of what we're doing overseas. And then I really do believe that young people recognize that the system is rigged. That, in my opinion, is not income equality, that's equal opportunity, and that we can offer up a big dose of that.
You know, I hadn't thought of it this way before, but we're both young at heart. We haven't had that squeezed out of us.
Yeah. Talk about the future. You know, one of the things that is interesting is that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they're not that much older than you. You guys are all baby boomers of one stripe or another. But they never talk about the future. They don't even talk about things like Uber or the sharing economy, unless they're saying that it needs to be regulated and shut down. What is your vision of a future America?
Let me start with the present. Has life in America ever been better than it is today? No, it hasn't. We get along better. Kids are smarter than ever. The number one law enforcement tool is this guy right here, when we're witnessing that all the time. When you think about the future and you think about a model of entrepreneurism where the middleman can be eliminated and you as a provider of goods and services can make more money and people that are buying those services pay less, that's an exciting... Airbnb! Kate and I, we have a home in Santa Fe. I think we could rent that darn thing out part-time for make an extra $40,000 a year. Well, the city of Santa Fe bans Airbnb. Come on, if that was money in our pockets, we'd be spending that all over Santa Fe. Well, they're protecting the hotel industry, and I just think there's a closed-mindedness with Democrats and Republicans, you know, protect the status quo when future is wide open if we'll just get a libertarian bent on the whole thing.
We are going to leave it there. Thank you so much. We have been talking with Governor Gary Johnson, running as the Libertarian nominee for president, and Governor William Weld, the vice presidential Libertarian nominee. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.